Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Retrofitting and sustainability are the future of construction. Visit sullis.ie/greenskills to find your course.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
No cull of cows or cars, that's how one senior source described in the Irish Examiner the updated climate action plan that will be signed off by Cabinet tomorrow. Now, sectoral emissions targets are now legally binding, but the Green Party leader Eamon Ryan has said a forced cull of cattle will not be needed because it will happen voluntarily through diversification. As we heard from Gabby just before the break, more detail is expected in other sectors as well tomorrow. Well, I'm joined now by Oisín Coughlan, who's Director of Friends of the Earth Ireland, and Justin McCarthy, who's CEO of the Farmers Journal. And you're both very welcome. Thank you for being here in the studio. Oisín, how important is this updated plan tomorrow, and what are you looking for? What are the key things you're looking for?
So it's a big step. I mean, we've had a lot of climate news over the last year or so, but this is the first plan done under the new law that was passed last year. So it's the first plan since we had those carbon budgets for the national emission ceilings and now the sectoral ceilings that you mentioned from the summer. And therefore, this plan is legally obliged, so to speak, to match those targets. And the ministers who have the individual sectors, whether that's transport or electricity or agriculture or buildings, are all responsible for having a plan that matches their targets. So this is unusual in Irish politics and policies, that ministers are legally responsible for what their plan is. So the first question would be, does it add up? Like, does it overall add up to the limits we have adopted by all the parties, apart from Main 2 in Parliament? And does it add up to the individual sectoral ceilings? And then we need to see big policies and measures in all those key sectors, so electricity, transport, buildings and agriculture.
And the Taoiseach said at the weekend that his ambition is to strengthen oversight and that would be managed from the Department of the Taoiseach. Is that something that you would welcome?
Yes, that is good. I mean, there is a unit there now that is responsible for implementation of the plan, along with the ministry in Eamon Ryan's department. And they've been doing a good job, but they probably need more resources, because this is a very big plan and has, like the last one, had 450 or more measures across government. So in order to make sure, like they did for the action plan for jobs back during the recession, are the departments actually following up? Historically in Ireland, we have an implementation gap, even when we have good policies.
And just on the transport issue, how in reality, because we hear about reducing car journeys in distance terms by 20%, how can that be done in real terms?
This is not the government coming for your cars. This is the government doubling down on providing cycleways and safe routes to school for walking as well as cycling, and public transport. I mean, it's about making the alternative to the car cheap, reliable, convenient and safe, if it's for cycling and walking, so that cut by 2030, we just don't need our cars as often. So there's also planning involved, as in ultimately we need to make sure our houses are closer to our schools and our amenities and our jobs rather than they are now. But in the meantime, it is that investing in cycling, walking and
congestion charges?
Yeah, well, I don't know whether congestion charges will be announced tomorrow. I think we should be having congestion charges in the cities and interest-free loans for electric vehicles in rural Ireland, outside the cities, where you are going to need your car for longer until we have public transport that's every village, every hour. You're going to need your car for longer. In Dublin, there's plenty of alternatives, and we need to free up road space for the cycling and the walking and the public transport.
It's like the retrofit. You know, when you say interest-free loans, people just hear loans. They don't want them. They don't want to have to take out a loan to buy something that perhaps they feel they don't need to buy, but the government would like them to have it.
Well, you don't have to take out the loan. You don't have to get it. But I mean, we do need people to, when they buy their next car, we need to make it as attractive as possible to buy an electric vehicle. So we need to have the infrastructure in place, and we need to have the financial supports in place, because we do need to get combustion engines off the roads as much as possible over the next 10 years. So Norway is going to ban the sale of any new combustion engine from 2025.
Justin, they're not coming for your cars, says Oisín. Are they coming for your cows?
Yeah, Claire, I think it's very important, and I hear this narrative, cars and cows, it's very important to make the distinction. If we're looking at achieving a territorial emission reduction target, moving people from your car to public transport is a net dividend, both territorially and internationally, because it reduces emissions. Clamping cars and culling cows are not the same, though, because food production is a globally demand-led industry, where if you cull a cow in Ireland and move that production to another part of the world, you're actually having a negative impact on international emissions. And the real
then change the demand.
Well, but at the end of the day, Claire, all of the narrative and all of the calculations are based on production. Actually, there is a very, very strong argument to be based on demand-led, because farmers don't produce food for it to go into storage anymore. They produce it for it to be consumed. And if we look at that demand, what you talk about, Claire, there's a lot of policy idealisms out there rather than reality. Over the last 20 years, meat consumption across the world has increased by 60%. Last year, the world ate more meat than it ever did before. In 2022, it will set a new record. The UN FAO are talking about demand for food increasing by 28%. Demand for beef and dairy products that Ireland produces and produces very sustainably is going to increase by 15 to 20% by 2030.
So you're saying we should continue to meet that demand rather than globally try to work on changing the demand?
What I'm saying, Claire, if tomorrow we see a policy that's driven by achieving a territorial emission reduction target and significantly underpins the capacity of Irish farmers to produce food, it will achieve a territorial emission goal, but it won't actually solve the real problem. And the real problem is...
So this is back to that argument. We can reduce our emissions, but in India, they're going to be doing X, Y and Z. In China, they're going to be doing...
No, it comes back to the argument as to what is the problem. If the problem is, or the challenge is to achieve a territorial emission reduction target, we should be reducing agricultural productivity in Ireland. But if you accept that the problem is feeding a rising world population whilst reducing the global environmental footprint of food production, well then, significantly reducing food production in Ireland is not the solution. It achieves a territorial emission, but adds to the overall problem.
What do you say to that, O'Shane?
Well, I did think we were past this debate because, to say it again, nobody in the world is going hungry tonight for a lack of Irish beef and dairy. And of course there's both a supply and a demand side to this. But having a consumption-based international climate regime, that boat has sailed. We have both internationally and now legally binding nationally targets for territorial emissions, for what we do here in Ireland. Now, that isn't to say we have no interest in what happens in the rest of the world. But in other areas, we don't say, and I don't want to make the analogies, we don't say just because there's a demand for something, we have to supply it because it would be worse if somebody else did. In lots of cases, we say there should be less of this going on. We won't supply it. We provide 10 to 15% of the world's baby milk powder. How much of that do we think there should be? The same is true of meat and some
Claire,
processed
today,
dairy.
Deforestation in the Amazon rainforest is running at its highest level since 2008, up 11% on last year. To put into context, in the last 4 years, Brazil has deforested alone, the same amount of agricultural land as is farmed in the whole in Ireland. So that is where we're going. Why is it doing that? Because Brazil is looking at those UN FAO figures and seeing demand for beef and dairy products rising, and they are preparing themselves to meet that demand.
But does that make it right? Does that make it right to aim to feed people who have this desire to eat beef?
Yeah,
like we're not looking at changing
correct.
What we supply, because things are going to change. Globally, things are going to change. That demand is likely to change as people,
Claire,
as awareness around the environment changes.
Tonight. The UNFAO predict that 2.5 times more people are facing food insecurity than they were in 2019.
Justin, you know I said because of a lack of Irish beef and dairy. There's plenty of people. The grain ships that came out of the Ukraine, the first three, one of them came here to feed our animals.
But,
it didn't go to Ethiopia or to Somalia. That's not sustainable.
But that
are just.
Let me just, Claire, if we want a policy, if we want to actually tackle the real issue of feeding more people, producing 30% more food by 2030, whilst reducing the environmental footprint of global food production, what I am saying is we need to reduce the emissions from Irish agriculture. I agree 100% with Oisín Coughlin, 100%. And we can do it. And I would like to see innovative policy measures coming forward from government tomorrow that actually helps farmers produce the same amount of food from less cows. And Oisín, you might find that strange, me saying it, but I've spent 20 years of my career advocating to farmers that technical efficiency and environmental sustainability go hand in hand. We have...
So you agree with the 10% reduction in the herd ambition?
What I agree with, Claire, is how we go about doing it. What I would like to see is policy innovation that comes forward to helping farmers produce more from 90% of their herd and naturally see the inefficient cows and whatnot moving out of the system.
So there's no point of disagreement then. If you're agreed on 10% reduction as well, you're both saying that that is doable and acceptable.
Claire,
well,
I think it's about the narrative. how you go about it. Talking about culling cows.
But nobody's... No, the people who talk about culling cows are normally the farming interests who set it up as a straw man. We have never spoken about culling cows.
I'm agreeing with you here because I think we have much more to gain by working together on this issue. What I would like to see is innovative measures coming forward tomorrow in the Climate Action Plan that incentivise farmers from getting more out of the 80-85% of the cows that they keep, that reduce the age at slaughter, that use better genetics, that help them get more from grass, use less nitrogen. And a lot of these are contained within some of the reports that the farm organisations are looking for.
Can I make two points on this? So I think there is, which is a pity we didn't get to that sooner, there is significant grounds for agreement there. Again, because no one's coming for the cows. Mm. What they are coming for is the pollution, and the pollution is going up and it needs to come down. And one of the key things has been a fertiliser. One of the key targets in the existing plan is fertiliser. And fertiliser use has dropped significantly this year. And actually, they may have already met the target that they set for 2030 because of the price rise this year. So the key thing is, how do we keep that down now? How do we lock in those gains? And unlike, say, congestion and cars don't rebound like we did after COVID, how do we lock in those gains? And I'm looking for that to tomorrow's plan.
I agree with Oisin on that. We have to accept that maybe nitrogen was too cheap, Oisin. Maybe we, as an industry, and I think this is where there needs to be a grown-up and a serious debate around this and be proactive and positive on it. And I think what Oisin is saying on nitrogen there, we can do more with nitrogen. We need to get our soils in better condition. We need to get our soils in better health. But what I would say, Claire, is we produced a KPMG economic impact assessment prior to this and prior to the government setting even the 21-30%. And it showed that with all the technology rolls out, we can get to about 18%. Getting from 18 to 25% is going to require a reduction in cows. What I would like to see is a debate on how do we maintain food production by getting more from less cows.
It's interesting that you accept that, and Oisin, you accept that, you know, we can get the same amount in terms of productivity from a smaller herd, but the Minister for Agriculture doesn't.
No, Claire, what I'd be very clear on is that we should be incentivising it. What annoys me and what frustrates farmers is that we're doing it through negative subsidisation and increased legislation. And what you talked, the Minister saying there will be nobody forced to reduce cow numbers, but if you take vital income supports away from beef farmers that were there to help them keep the cows, that is forcing them.
So when we hear about this reduction happening voluntarily through diversification, you believe that will be forced on farmers using economic measures?
I hear Ryan talking about this panacea of diverse income streams. He has yet to tell us what they are. Farmers are business people. Claire.
Certainly,
they will respond.
What are they,
Oisin?
Do you know?
I think we'll probably hear more tomorrow. But from what I've what we hear in the discussions so far, it's things like solar on your farm. It's things like forestry, and it is then the technical innovations around multi you know, different grasses and so on. So, I think there's plenty of a basis for moving forward. But it will ultimately be more than just those technical fixes. They won't, as you say, they won't get us all the way to 25%.
So do you accept then when Charlie McConlogue says government will not cut the national herd for emissions targets?
So first of all, there's no such thing as the national herd, as we'll agree on too. Yeah. There's like lots of farmers who own cows, just like there's lots of individuals who own cars. So the government hasn't got the power to cut the cut the herd, unless they did. Like, you know, when there's foot and mouth or something, there are state-backed culls. So it will be about how small businesses, i.e. farmers, and some big businesses, choose to invest over the next 10 years
Through economic pressure being put on farmers.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way as we talked about cars, we talked about, I'd love to talk about buildings briefly before we finish. It's the incentives we face, whether there's the supports we need to change our investment and our behaviour, or whether there isn't. Mm. And that won't all be subsidies.
What you're saying,
there's
there.
Plenty of agricultural supports. I mean, I think it's okay to have some.
Listen, Justin, can I ask you about the transport ambition as well, to cut car journey distances by 20%? I mean, a lot of your readers would live in rural Ireland. Yeah. What will they hear when they hear that?
Yeah, I think, and again, to put the cars in the context and the cow numbers in the context, I look at CSO figures and I see car numbers increasing by 60% in the last 20 years, cow numbers increasing by 4. So I think, Oisin, you and I are on the same page. Maybe where we differ on this slightly is, I know a lot of the readers of the Farmers Journal, their kids could be 3-4 miles from the schools, Oisin, and I think you would accept this, that there has to be nearly a two-tiered policy for people living in urban centres and people maybe more remote. And I think it's a phased process of, as you say, every village, every hour. And that's a very, very good slogan. But today, that is not the case. And certainly a lot of the readers of the Farmers' Journals living in rural towns and villages, getting a cycle lane or getting a footpath to their school is not even on the radar are at this stage. Getting a road without potholes might be more of an ambition.
So then there'd be the people who would be interested in the interest-free loan for the electric vehicle.
Well, interest-free loan, Claire, like loans still have to be paid back even if they're interest-free.
People buy cars all the time. The question is, what's the next car you buy? Yeah. And what choices do you face? And do we make the electric vehicle a viable choice for more people who need to make car journeys the next time they
buy. Do you know how much an electric car is?
And
people might be looking at changing their car for a car that's, I don't know, €4,000, not something that's €40,000.
But I think we're talking about new car sales. Obviously, the second-hand market is going to continue as it is.
Claire, there's a lot of Dublin-rage cars in rural Ireland. E.g., they spend a period of time in Dublin and then they're bought second-hand by rural people with maybe low miles and low wear and tear on them. So, like, it is this isn't a problem that can be solved. But I do agree with Oisin. The first step in that is every R, every bus, or what a slogan is to get the infrastructure in place. I even see some of our own staff now with remote working. Our staff are scattered out all over Ireland, and they are using bus and public transport now to come to the office maybe one day a week or 2 days a week. It's like you say, Ocean, with the fertilizer, it's the cost of fuel thing that's driving that as well. But I think if the infrastructure was there, there would be a move.
I'll tell you where to start. I think you mentioned schools. There was talk of free school buses for everyone this September, but then the supply wasn't there. So we still have time before next school year. Every child that lives more than 3 kilometres away from the school should be guaranteed a bus place by next September.
You're looking,
that begins to the shift.
Just before we finish, Oisin, you're looking for something on new gas boilers as well
tomorrow. The Programme for Government says that from 2023, there should be no new gas boilers in new build homes.
Yep.
But that needs to be made into an actual policy. But in the building regulations, we need to see that tomorrow, and then not to connect any other homes to the gas network. It'll be a while before we get them all out of existing homes, but not into new homes.
Right, that's a big ask. We'll leave that one there. Oisin Coughlan and Justin McCarthy, thank you both for coming in. Take a quick break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.